Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Walt Disney's fourth quarter 2005 earnings conference call. My name is Carlo, and I'll be your coordinator for today's presentation. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. We'll be facilitating a question-and-answer session towards the end of today's prepared remarks, at which time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star followed by 1 on your touchtone telephone. If at any time during the call you require audio assistance, feel free to press star followed by 0, and a coordinator will be happy to assist you. It is now my pleasure to turn the presentation over to your host for today's conference, Wendy Webb, Senior Vice President of Investor Relations and Shareholder Services. Please proceed.
Thank you. Good afternoon, and thanks for joining us. On the call with us today are Bob Iger, President and Chief Executive, Tom Staggs, Senior Vice Bob will lead off, followed by Tom. That's a cool team. Meyer Dust to conclude. That's 30. Let's get started. Bob?
Thanks, Wendy. Pleased to report that we achieved our goal of delivering double-digit EPS growth for the year, despite the challenges we faced in the studio in the fourth quarter. Our continued strong performance this year reflects how well-positioned the company is for the future. I've been in my new role at Disney for just under 2 months. During this time, I've been listening with great interest to the debate among various constituencies about old media versus new media. What this debate highlights is the simple fact that the world is changing, due in large part to advances in digital technology that have led to an explosion in media, resulting in increases in content, distribution, and communication. This is a global phenomenon as we are seeing the growth of mass media infrastructure in both developed and emerging markets. Competition for the consumer remains fierce, as consumers with a limited amount of leisure time have significantly greater choice. Distribution methods new, more sophisticated consumer electronics devices are multiplying, offering consumers far more flexibility, customization, and control over how, when, and where they consume content. With this dynamic in mind, we established 3 strategic priorities to meet the challenges of this era, to best position Disney to reach our goal of delivering long-term growth and increased shareholder value. They are, once again, driving creativity and innovation, applying technology, and global expansion. We would like to reinforce them as they tie closely to our current performance and will continue to serve as our roadmap for the future. Nothing is more important to us than creativity, central to our growth over the long term. Great creative content, whether a TV series, movie, or theme park attraction, is powering us today and will continue to drive us into the future. It's essential that our creative efforts remain vibrant, relevant, and to a large extent branded, most notably Disney and ESPN, as we believe demand for branded content will grow in a universe of choice. To that end, all of us are extremely pleased with the early results of Feature Animation's first all-CGI film, Chicken Little. However, we recognize that this early success is only a first step. Animation is and will remain at the heart and soul of Disney, provides the basis for cultivating enduring characters and franchises that extend across our businesses. As such, developing high-quality Disney animated films is our number one creative pursuit, and thus investing in this business is essential. Our focus on creativity also includes attracting great talent, partnering with great talent, creating differentiated content designed specifically for new media platforms. Delivering high-quality content will enable us to occupy new technological space and allow us to cross geographical borders. Our growing publishing business at Starwave Mobile, our recent acquisition of Living Mobile, and ESPN's 360 broadband product are just a few strong examples of our creative efforts in this direction. The application of technology is another priority, as new distribution platforms consumer electronics devices penetrate our markets. We expect a voracious appetite for content, and in particular, high-quality branded content. No new platform, whether it is a consumer electronics device or a multi-channel system, can penetrate a market and retain customers without offering great content. This creates enormous opportunities for the Walt Disney Company. We firmly believe in a platform-agnostic approach to distribution as capturing a first mover position under the right circumstances. We believe that the strength of our brands and content drives our first mover opportunities, which in turn affords our brands and content premium positioning, pricing, and incremental marketing support platforms that promote strong brands and drive interest in their service. A recent deal with Apple for both ABC and Disney Channel programming is a great example of our approach. We have a long line of potential distribution partners interested in our content. While we undoubtedly will strike new deals have to offer the right economics, an acceptable consumer proposition, strong protection for our IP, and an otherwise favorable environment for our content, which is what Apple provided. We will not make deals for the purpose of headlines. Instead, we're focused on getting our product into the marketplace on a well-timed, well-protected, and well-priced basis. Apple recently announced it sold 1 million video downloads in less than 20 days of the launch of its video service, noting that Desperate Housewives and Lost were among the top downloads, which is fitting proof that demand exists and that consumers are willing to use new, legitimate distribution methods and devices to access content in new ways. Technology also powers creativity and innovation. Across our company, we're using technology to improve our product and remain on the leading edge of entertainment offerings. Our relationship with consumers is all important, and we are committed to delivering the best consumer experience possible. Chicken Little in digital 3D, ABC and ESPN's wide array of programming in high def, and our attraction Expedition Everest that opens at Walt Disney World this spring are excellent examples. Based on the positive consumer reaction to Chicken Little in 3D, we now plan to release Meet the Robinsons in 3D format in fiscal 07. Applying technology to enhance our content and extend its distribution enables us to get closer to our increasingly more sophisticated consumers worldwide. Based on consumer demand, it is essential that we continuously reevaluate traditional business models and adapt accordingly. Our investments in ESPN Mobile and Disney Mobile are key examples how we're placing bets on branded content and wireless services to drive both a stronger connection with our consumers as well as long-term returns. This is one of the smartest things we can do as a company, to be thoroughly in touch with our customers, in tune with our markets, and on top of emerging trends. Global expansion is the third prong of our strategic priorities. While globalization remains a challenge, we have tremendous opportunities to better penetrate international markets, both developed and emerging. In emerging markets, where disposable income is rising and mass communications infrastructure is growing, we plan to aggressively expand our businesses. With the opening of Hong Kong Disneyland in September, we now have an important driver for all Disney businesses in the region. During its first 2 months of operation, the resort has achieved one of the highest guest satisfaction scores we've ever seen, which points to the quality of our product, its word-of-mouth marketing potential, and its outlook over the long term. It's imperative that we continue to make strides to better reach, address, and represent the diverse global markets we serve. As we expand our businesses and brands into emerging markets, we're making strategic investments in local content. For instance, we're currently developing original Disney-branded movies in China and plan to do the same in India. Financial performance will be the ultimate measure of our success as our strategic priorities are put into action. We intend to be disciplined in our approach to our current cost structure and our investments. This investment approach extends not only to our internal development, but also to how we approach acquisitions. As we have stated in the past, we do not feel the need to acquire assets just to get bigger or simply to wade into new space. We are prepared to move wisely and quickly in order to respond to rapid changes in the marketplace. In order to do so, we're placing greater authority while emphasizing accountability at the business unit level. I'm very realistic about the challenges that lie ahead for our company, and I'm extremely enthusiastic about our creative capabilities, strategic direction, the strength of our senior management team, and our willingness to adapt or change our businesses or structure best serve our consumers and marketplace conditions. Adapting to new business conditions within an established company is never easy, but here at Disney, it is a real priority. We're making creative excellence and consumer focus our primary focal points, and that orientation will help us adapt and innovate to the benefit of our shareholders. As we embark on the new fiscal year, we have considerable momentum across our businesses, thanks to continued success in primetime at ABC, our tremendous portfolio of premier sports programming across ESPN's now multimedia platforms, strong continued results for our worldwide 50th anniversary celebration at our theme parks and resorts, and an exciting array of merchandise from Disney's Consumer Products Division, ranging from our Princess Collection to video games. At the studio, we're encouraged by the early box office results of Chicken Little and believe we have great films on the horizon this year, including the first installment of The Chronicles of Narnia, The Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe, Pixar's Cars, and Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man's Chest. I want to ensure Disney is admired for our performance, admired for the quality and integrity of our products and people, and admired because we are modern, innovative, willing to take risks, and not bound by old rules or outdated habits. We must be user-friendly for those who work for us, those who partner with us, and those who buy our products and invest in our stock. Now, I'm going to turn the call over to Tom Staggs, our CFO, to provide more details on the quarter and the year. Tom?
Thank you, Bob. We continue to look at three key financial metrics in assessing our company's overall performance and to gauge how well our strategic initiatives are translating to delivering value to our shareholders. These metrics are earnings per share, return on invested capital, and free cash flow. For 2005, we delivered double-digit growth in earnings per share for the third year in a row. We improved our return on invested capital, again, for the third year in a row, and we delivered over $2.4 billion in free cash flow after consolidation of our less-than-wholly-owned international parks. Media Networks has contributed greatly to our momentum quarter after quarter and stands out as the biggest driver of our company's strong performance again this year. Perhaps the most gratifying aspect of Media Networks' contribution has been ABC's resurgence, fueled by the success of shows like Desperate Housewives, Lost, and Grey's Anatomy. As we projected, the network reached profitability this year, and we are on our way to delivering further substantial improvement as positive trends are continuing into Q1 of 2006. ABC's adult 18 to 49 ratings are up another 5% over last season, and we're seeing strength in the ad market with scatter pricing for ABC running high single-digit percentages above upfront levels. At our television stations, Q4 advertising sales were up by roughly 2%, and advertising in our radio operations was up about 1%. So far this quarter, pacings for TV stations and radio continue at about those same levels. In addition to improvement in our ad-based businesses, syndication sales of My Wife and Kids boosted broadcasting operating profit by over $60 million in Q4. And as Bob discussed, we continue to explore the potential for our shows on other platforms. This fall, we released last season's episodes of Desperate Housewives, Alias, and Lost on DVD, and I'm pleased to note that Lost is on track to sell 1.2 million units, making it the best-selling TV drama on DVD for 2005. We have a number of successful shows that we should be able to offer through syndication, including According to Jim and Scrubs in 2006, Desperate Housewives and Lost in 2008, and Grey's Anatomy in 2009. We'll also explore further opportunities for ancillary platforms for these titles as well. Based on current ratings and assuming consistent marketplace trends, these shows, combined with the shows we've already sold, could add well over $1 billion in operating income to us over the next 5 years across both traditional and new media platforms. Disney's commitment to investing in high-quality family entertainment is also generating gains in viewership at the Disney Channel, which is delivering strong primetime and total day ratings improvement across all its key demos. Similarly, we are continuing to bolster the programming at ABC Family with a wide variety of original reality shows, movies, and scripted series. Although this investment dampens near-term results, we believe our new shows provide the kind of quality, family-oriented content that draws and holds the audiences that attract advertisers. This was evident in Q4 as ABC Family again delivered double-digit growth in both ad and affiliate revenue. But the key driver of growth in cable once again was ESPN. ESPN recorded double-digit increases in revenue and operating profit for both the quarter and the year, even as we invested in new ventures like Mobile ESPN, ESPNU, and ESPN Deportes. Our fourth quarter was helped somewhat by the timing of revenue deferrals and recognition. We've entered into significant multi-platform programming deals for ESPN, including Monday Night Football, Major League Baseball, and World Cup Soccer. We expect that this compelling programming will further enhance ESPN's relationship with fans, not only in the context of traditional media, but also across new media platforms, including broadband and wireless. ESPN is positioning itself to deliver as sports fans look for enhanced and more convenient access to the best in live event coverage, sports news and information, fantasy updates, and more. While we're obviously investing in extending ESPN's position as the leading sports media brand across all platforms, we are also confident in our ability to deliver strong growth well into the future. We have the majority of our sports costs locked in through long-term rights deals. Similarly, we have subscriber rates locked in, or soon to be locked in, through long-term affiliate deals. As a result, much of ESPN's economic model for the next several years is relatively predictable. Of course, ESPN's growth going forward could be impacted by the ad market and depends in part on the success of our new platform and program initiatives. However, given the health we're seeing in sports advertising and ESPN's proven ability to deliver against key demographics, we feel comfortable with our ability to deliver double-digit average annual profit growth through 2009. At our theme parks, we have also invested to reinforce the significant competitive advantage we have in this business, and the growth in our results provides evidence of our growing return on that investment. At Disneyland Resort, our 50th anniversary celebration is resonating strongly with our guests. Is a good example of how we can get leverage out of our existing asset base through innovative marketing campaigns and less capital-intensive entertainment experiences. Attendance at Disneyland for Q4 grew by 15% versus last year, with each guest segment up double digits. West Coast occupancies increased by roughly 7 percentage points to almost 97%. At Walt Disney World, we also saw positive trends. Total Walt Disney World attendance grew by more than 10% for the quarter, led by resident and international visitation. We experienced only a small number of cancellations as a result of this year's hurricanes Katrina, Rita, and Wilma. Walt Disney World occupancies rose to 77%. Firm spending and per capita spending for our domestic parks rose by 4% and 3% respectively, led by strength at Disneyland. Looking ahead, rooms on the books at our domestic parks for Q1 are trending above prior year by mid-single-digit percentages. 2 years ago, we laid out our goal of returning 20% margin for our parks operations by the end of 2008. Providing progress updates on this margin goal on an apples-to-apples basis has become a bit complicated given that we are now required to consolidate our partially owned parks internationally, and we have begun expensing of employee stock options. Excluding the effect of consolidating our international parks and the impact of stock option expense, margins for theme parks for the year increased by 220 basis points to 17.3%. As long as the travel and tourism market remains healthy, we continue to expect to meet our margin target through a combination of higher volumes, higher asset utilization, productivity gains, and tight cost control. In addition, our high-margin flanker businesses, such as Disney Cruise Line and Disney Vacation Club, should help us meet our goal. Our studio results were disappointing. During our last earnings call, I highlighted several potential performance issues that could impact our studio performance in Q4. These included the release of 6 more Miramax films this quarter than the prior year, when Miramax results were relatively strong. In addition to the marketing and amortization costs associated with their release, a number of these titles failed to deliver at the box office. The Touchstone title Dark Water also performed poorly. We're seeing very strong results from Flight Plan, but we released this picture late in the quarter. We also experienced weaker than expected worldwide sales for our home video product this past quarter, especially on the direct-to-video side, where Tarzan 2 and Lilo and Stitch 2 performed below our expectations. Our results have also been impacted by a challenging marketplace overall. So far this year, box office for the U.S. is down 9%. In home video, more and more titles are competing for shelf space and consumer attention. The ratio of DVD sales to box office for theatrical titles has dropped by roughly 10% this year. TV series on DVD have become the fastest growing segment of the overall DVD business, up an estimated 30% compared to 2004. In fact, of the nearly 10,000 new titles released so far this year, only 413 have been theatrical titles. By contrast, there have been nearly 1,500 new TV titles released on DVD so far this year, including 499 complete season box sets. While we've had success with our TV product on DVD this year, our historic television library is modest relative to a number of other media companies, and thus our home video results have not been bolstered by DVD sales to any great extent. We are addressing studio performance issues by trimming costs, managing our production and marketing budgets even more closely, and allocating capital resources to those film projects that we believe will yield the greatest returns on investment, not just the highest box office results. At Consumer Products, we registered nice gains in our merchandise licensing business, where earned royalties increased by 8% for the year. However, our near-term ramp-up in development spending for video games somewhat dampened operating profit for the quarter and the year. Taken as a whole, this year's results give us reason to be very optimistic about continuing our growth in 2006 and beyond. We said last year that we're not inclined to give specific earnings projections for any given year or quarter. Since we're a content-driven company, we will naturally tend to see quarter-to-quarter volatility driven by the strength and timing of our releases. Our goal is to manage not for quarterly earnings, but for long-term growth and shareholder value. In fact, our goal is to deliver average annual double-digit growth in earnings through at least 2008 off the strong base we set in 2004, barring any unforeseen downturn in the economic climate for our businesses. And our 2006 results should be consistent with this target. Our further goal is to couple this growth with attractive returns on invested capital and strong cash flow. For 2006, we expect our growth to be heavily weighted toward the latter half of the year, due in large measure to the timing of our theatrical and home video releases and the deferral of affiliate revenue recognition at ESPN. For Q1 alone, we currently expect to defer recognition of more than $100 million of ESPN affiliate revenue into the latter half of the fiscal year. At the studio, the lower performance of our recent theatrical slates will have a carryover effect into 2006 as those films move through the home video and TV windows, particularly in the early part of the year. There are also several swing factors that will influence our full year 2006 performance. Media Networks should post solid growth again in fiscal 2006 as this year's successful upfront sales effort for our various ad-supported networks, growing affiliate fees in cable, and continued improvement in ratings performance at ABC should all contribute to our bottom line. Of course, changes in the strength of the ad market, as well as ABC ratings for the balance of the year, including our mid-season lineup, remain important swing factors. At our parks, our success is linked to continued health and consumer spending in general, and to travel and tourism in particular. We look for continued improvement in attendance and occupancy in 2006, driven by the ongoing Disneyland 50th anniversary celebration and the opening of Expedition Everest at Walt Disney World this spring. We'll also benefit from a full year of operations and the absence of pre-opening costs at Hong Kong Disneyland. At the studio, our 2006 film slate is off to a solid start with Chicken Little. We have three of the most anticipated films of the year, starting with the first installment in The Chronicles of Narnia, which we're releasing in 3 weeks with our partners at Walden Media. The next release from Pixar, Cars, opens in June, and Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man's Chest, follows in July. Of these four films, we expect Chicken Little and Narnia to also be released at home video during our fiscal 2006. In addition, we have several other films that, despite somewhat lesser investment levels than the four films I just named, could have a real impact on results. These include Casanova, Shaggy Dog, Guardian, and Invincible. Of course, no one can predict box office performance with certainty, but we look for improved results for 2006 as a whole, driven by a better performing theatrical slate, as well as lower spending at Miramax. In addition, theatrical and home video market dynamics, especially pricing and sell-through ratios, will be key determinants of our studio performance. At Consumer Products, we expect to see continued growth in our earned royalties. However, our results will be dampened by roughly $100 million in investment in video games. That's more than double our spending in 2005. In 2006, a number of our video game titles are based on some of our bigger studio releases, like Chronicles of Narnia and Pirates, and the performance of these key titles could meaningfully impact our results. Earlier this year, we announced our mobile ESPN and Disney Mobile initiatives, the first wireless phone services specifically targeted to sports fans and families, respectively. These initiatives will expand our mobile revenue streams to include all components, from voice to creative content to data, and we believe that these initiatives could represent a substantial opportunity for the company. In 2006, we expect to fund more than $130 million in losses to launch these new services. Bear in mind, however, that due to customer acquisition costs, each new subscriber represents an initial deficit. Therefore, in the early years, the more successful we are, the greater the startup losses will incur. However, with our strong Disney and ESPN brands, we think we can build a strong, profitable customer base over time that justifies and generates an attractive return on this initial investment. We will continue to allocate capital towards areas like these that we think make strategic sense and which offer the potential for long-term growth and value creation for our shareholders. One of our primary considerations in evaluating investments is prospective market size. For example, the market for PC, console, and handheld games was over $17 billion last year, and it continues to grow rapidly. The mobile voice and data market is obviously huge, and even modest market share for MVNO can translate into significant incremental revenue to our company. But potential market size isn't enough. We also consider whether or not we can possess and sustain a competitive advantage in that business and therefore ultimately deliver excessive returns on our investment. And given the strength of our brands and content, we feel we have the potential to deliver meaningful value with these initiatives. Along with profitable reinvestment, returning cash to shareholders remains an important part of our capital plan. Disney has paid dividends to shareholders continuously for the last 49 years. Last year, we increased the dividend to 24 cents per share, and we anticipate moderate, sustained increases in the dividend going forward. In addition, since August of 2004, we've invested over $3.7 billion to purchase nearly 150 million shares of Disney stock. Our purchase activity not only reflects our discipline in returning cash to shareholders, but also our confidence in our ability to grow shareholder value over time. Given the ongoing changes in the media business, it's imperative that we continue to closely manage our existing businesses, even as we innovate for the future. At the same time, our primary goals are straightforward: to deliver outstanding and differentiated content to consumers when they want it, where they want it, and how they want it, while also delivering increased value for our investors. With that, I'll turn it back to Wendy for some Q&A.
Thank you, Tom. We're ready to take the first question, operator.
Thank you. Now, ladies and gentlemen, at this time, if you wish to ask a question, you may do so by pressing star 1 on your touchtone telephone. If that question has been answered or you wish to remove yourself from the queue, you may then press star 2. Again, star 1 for any question. And our first question is from the line of Anthony Noto with Goldman Sachs.
Thank you very much. Robert, Tom, I was wondering if you could comment on the outlook for home video at an industry level for growth in 2006. Clearly, this year has been impacted by a number of different transitions in terms of the mix as well as the growth of DVD players. But as you look at the 06, not particularly focused on the performance of any one film, how do you see the industry sort of trending? And then second question is, Chicken Little looks like it could finish over $160 million in domestic box office, considering that you own 100% of that film and its distribution. Could you earn a profit near what you'd receive from the typical collaboration with Pixar? Thanks.
Well, this is Bob, Anthony. I'll comment about the home video market. While I'm not certain I'm going to answer your question fully about the outlook for 06, I'll just say a few things about what we're seeing in the market today, which we believe will continue into 06. First of all, it seems like what I'll call the top titles, meaning the highest grossing movie box office, box office movies, seem to be a little less vulnerable in the marketplace, meaning they're converting at a better rate in terms of number of DVDs sold per U.S. box office. That positions us fairly well with movies like Chicken Little and Narnia and Cars and Pirates, even though the videos of Cars and Pirates won't hit until our fiscal 07. We believe that the continued glut of product on the marketplace will, continue in 06, meaning there's just going to be more and more titles released. Although a lot of what you're seeing in television were titles that had never been released before, so we're seeing a bit of a balloon that at some point will start to deflate. But I think we're going to see continued increase in number of titles in the marketplace, which causes a tremendous amount of competition, not just for shelf space, but for consumer spend. What we're doing is we're taking a hard look at our marketing expense. We're also considering reducing the number of titles we put into the marketplace from a variety of directions, basically to better contend with the marketplace conditions. The other thing that is a great unknown is what the ultimate impact of a new DVD format will have on the business, although you'll see less of that in 06. With PlayStation 3 coming on the market, and some other new hardware and some new software being released in the marketplace, certainly to the latter end of 06, it's possible you're going to see some changes in the marketplace dynamics. But again, I think they'll be limited in terms of their impact on 06. Tom, you want to add to that at all?
No, I think that's right. I think the important thing is that, that big titles still seem to cut through and sell through quite well, and we hope to see that continue, especially given the lineup that we've got for the year.
On Chicken Little, Tom, you want to address the profitability question? We're not predicting what it's going to do in the end in terms of box office, so it might be premature to answer your question.
Right. I think it's early for us to make any predictions about where it will be. We're obviously very pleased with the performance and hope it continues the pace. To your point, obviously, we own 100% of Chicken Little, so 100% of the upside from a successful film comes to us, which is great. Chicken Little has a ways to go before the total profits of our company will match some of the most successful Pixar titles, but it's certainly a great first step in that direction, and certainly an affirmation of the company's ability to create a CG film that is embraced by audiences. So we're very pleased.
But let's also not forget that Chicken Little's average box office is somewhere in the $275 million range in U.S.
Pixar's
in U.S. box.
Right.
And so even though Chicken Little is doing quite well, we're not predicting it's going to get anywhere close to that level.
Yeah, to that point, profits aren't necessarily linear with box office performance. So the higher the box office performance, sometimes you get a little bit of a multiplier effect. So we'll continue to keep our fingers crossed, and we're pleased with where that's going.
Thank you.
Thanks. We'll take the next question, please.
Our next question is from the line of William Drury with Credit Suisse First Boston. Sir, if your phone is muted.
Maybe we can come back to Bill Drury.
Our next question is from the line of Jason Bazinet with Citigroup.
Hi, just maybe a longer-term question from Mr. Iger. If you look out beyond maybe even 07, how important of a strategic priority is it for you to kind of accelerate the top line from some of the trends we've seen more recently?
Well, our priority is both to accelerate the top line and run the company more efficiently. I'm not sure that there's one necessarily takes priority over the other, and top line acceleration is going to vary with our businesses. We obviously have some businesses whose top line is thoroughly reliant on creative output.
Mm-hmm.
We have other businesses that are a little bit more mature in nature, like the broadcasting business, where it becomes even more vital to manage the bottom line or the expense side. One of the reasons why we're focused on investing in creativity and then applying technology to not only strengthen the creative output but to distribute more efficiently and then to globalize is so that we can further diversify our revenue streams. The notion of applying technology to distribute our content in more ways is designed mostly to grow top line and to be closer or more in touch with our consumers, which we believe in the end will also help us grow the top line. So I'm not sure we put one necessarily ahead of the other. This is a company that is very focused on strategic growth initiatives. Those obviously are designed to grow top lines, why we're investing in new platforms and growing businesses like wireless and video games. And we're confident that ultimately they will pay off nicely for the company, but it's going to take a few years for them to have a real impact on top line growth.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll take another question, please.
Our next question is from the line of Doug Mitchelson with Deutsche Bank.
Thank you very much. Bob, you talked about investing heavily in animation. Does that include investing in or acquiring other animation studios, or were you talking more about just an ever greater focus on internal production? Thanks.
Well, neither. I was saying simply that I believe in terms of all the company's creative endeavors or pursuits, nothing is more important than animation. If you look at the history of the company, Walt built the company on animation. The great strides the company made in successes in the late 80s through the mid-90s, another great example of how animation really powered significant growth of the company, not just at the studio, but across all of our businesses, which is why we believe that allocating capital in that direction and getting the creative process right is vital to us. We actually believe that Our ability to cross technological platforms or geographical borders will also be enhanced if we get animation right. And then lastly, the impact overall on the perception of the Disney company and the Disney brand will grow or improve if our animation is right, because that is such a significant impact on people's impression of Disney. I'm not specifying whether we will grow organically or through acquisition. I'm simply saying that it's a priority of ours to get animation right. And I don't believe I necessarily need to elaborate on how we do that other than what I've already said.
Okay, we'll take another question, please.
Our next question is from the line of Lowell Singer with SG Tower.
Thanks. Bob, I have two questions. First, can you talk more broadly about acquisition priorities? Clearly, content's a focus. What sorts of businesses interest you on the acquisition side? And second, you guys clearly led the way on this pay-per-download model. Some of the other networks and some of the cable networks have followed. Should we read into that at all with regard to where you think the networks are regarding their concern about the impact of DVRs on the ad market, or do you think we're still not really close to that inflection point? Thanks.
Well, the second question first. What you should read into, at least from our perspective, I can't talk about really our competitors, that we are very much in tune with what we believe the consumer is doing and the consumer wants. We believe that given the power of technology today, the consumer has more authority or power than ever before and is using it, and is willing to pay a price to gain access to content that they want, in effect pay for either quality or convenience or both. And so what we're really saying is that it's imperative for us to not force content to not relegate content to the traditional, to its traditional boundaries, because the consumer doesn't really care about those boundaries. And to make sure that the content is available under the right circumstances, which means well-priced, well-timed to market, and also well-protected from an IP perspective. I said in my comments, we're not going to make just any deal. We're going to make the right deal for the company, and what Apple provided us was the right deal on all of those levels. By the way, including with the fact that when you think about intellectual property protection, one of the things that they are very good at is if content or intellectual property is stolen from their system, they have the technological and the financial wherewithal and the resolve to basically fix the problem, which essentially means you can't put your product on just any platform or be partnered with any entity. Some recent announcement about content being on some peer-to-peer sites, as a for instance, and I'm not necessarily negative on that, but you've got to be really careful that you're in business with an entity that's going to be willing to go after the pirates if their system has been hacked. So, I'm not sure, other than saying we're going to follow the consumer and thus basically follow the consumer's spending power, I'm not sure that there's any other message than the one that we've given. So the first question about acquisition, our focus in acquisition is likely to be content. That's what we essentially do for a living as a company. I think you can conclude that the content is in all likelihood it's got to be consistent with the values of the company in a sense. And so in other words, we're not necessarily going to buy an online gambling company. Would be a good example of that, but I don't think we can be any more specific than that right now. We believe that content is king in this world, thanks to all the opportunities that technology is providing both content creators and consumers. And so if we were to acquire, it would likely to be in that direction. Also, just going back to your question about DVRs, I think it's really too early to tell. The penetration of DVRs is roughly, 10% of U.S. households. And you hear I know there was a flurry of activity over that because of a panel discussion in New York this week. I just think it's too early to tell. I think it's a powerful tool for customers, but it also may end up being a powerful tool for content providers because it's going to result in more consumption.
Okay, thank you. We'll take the next question,
please. Our next question is from the line of VJ Gayant with Lehman Brothers.
Hi, I have two questions. First, Tom, you talked about margins in theme park approaching 20% by 2009, but net of your pension costs, do you think you can see margin improvements in 2006? And second, is there any way we could sort of X out sort of the Miramax numbers in film renting and to sort of show what the studio would have done, you know, on a going forward basis?
Well, with regard to margins at the parks, yes, I do expect to see margin improvement in 2006. And I think we'll, as you point out, we have to absorb some pension and post-retirement medical increases in 2006. And for the company as a whole, that's in the neighborhood of $150 million. And you should assume that 70% or so of that ends up at the theme parks, just given the size of the employee base there. Having said that, and even taking that into account, we are looking to expand margins further in 07 as we continue along our goal to reach the 20% that we talked about. I think the best thing that I could probably tell you in terms of the studio entertainment business, I'm not sure that isolating Miramax gives you a normalization. It was the biggest driver of year-over-year change for the quarter, and in the neighborhood of a couple hundred million dollars of change quarter-over-quarter, and so that gives you a sense of how much that impact was. When we think about Miramax going forward, remember that Miramax, a number of years back, had some good years and did contribute to the studio, less so in the more recent years. But we're looking to bring down our investments dramatically in Miramax and really get back to where we were before. So we think that it can be a positive contributor to our profitability and our returns at the studio as we go forward.
Thank you. We'll take the next question, please.
Our next question is from the line of William Drury with Credit Suisse First Boston.
Thanks very much. Just a couple of questions. One, Tom, you talked about Hong Kong Disneyland being a positive swing factor. I was wondering if you could quantify what that impact could be for fiscal 2006. And also wondering on the video game business, you're doubling the investment, but is there any possibility that if there's a hit or two that drives it, that it could be profitable at all fiscal 2006, or is that something that's further out? And then just a question for Bob, just wondering where you are on the Pixar negotiations and specifically on the sequel to the library that you've already greenlighted. I'm just wondering if you're still full speed ahead on starting production on this. Thank you.
Okay, so I think that to be helpful on Hong Kong, because we're not going to make any predictions about Hong Kong profitability for 2006 yet. It's very, very early after the opening of Hong Kong. I think the most helpful thing I can mention is that the rough order of magnitude of impact from Hong Kong in terms of 2005 because of the pre-opening, et cetera, on the consolidated operating income line was about $100 million. So that gives you a sense of what that swing factor can be just on the basis of going from pre-opening to the operations of the park. As for video games, we do have some important titles out there, and I'm not ready to predict what those titles will do, but Narnia title looks very, very strong, and certainly if those blow out, they can have a real impact. Recall, though, that we expense all production costs for home video as it's incurred. We don't capitalize those expenses. It's a more conservative approach to doing the accounting. And so because of that, the production work we're doing for releases this year and for releases that will come later, the expenses are flowing through the income statement in 2006. That will make it quite difficult for the video game business to necessarily overcome that. It's certainly not impossible, but I think that for this year, you should expect that the incremental investment in video games will, as we said, dampen the growth of consumer products somewhat.
Regarding Pixar, Steve Jobs in his earnings comments last week said that we were in deep discussions and it was their goal to resolve things by the end of the year. And I don't really think there's any need for me to add any flavor to that except to say that I believe in Cars, which John Lasseter is directing, we've got a great movie on our hands. And regardless of what happens in terms of the relationship, we're going to have a fantastic summer with Pixar because I really believe it's going to be a classic in the true sense of the word. As it relates to sequels, we've said that we were in the process of making Toy Story 3 is actually in pretty early stage production. There's been some development on some of the other sequels, but not what I'll call full production. And if we were to do a deal with them, obviously the goal would be for them to make sequels to some of these films, and we'd have to redirect some of our efforts if that were the case, but that wouldn't necessarily be a bad thing. But again, I'm not going to add anything more in terms of where things stand in the talks themselves.
Thank you. We'll take the next question, please.
Our next question is from the line of David Miller with Sanders Morris Harris.
Yeah, hi, Tom. A couple questions for you. On the 3-cent charge with regard to the write-off of the Delta Airlines lease, are there any accelerated tax payments that are baked into that 3-cent charge, or is that just, you know, if you will, an organic charge just related to the lease? And then also, I believe you guys are just surpassing the $40 million sub-level for SoapNet. If I'm not mistaken, Tom, you guys have doubled your advertising base on that cable network over the last year to 18 months. Can you quantify what the operating income contribution was for SoapNet in the quarter? Thanks very much.
Well, with regard to the Delta Airlines write-down, the you know, that was just over $100 million. There are tax payments that are potential tax payments that are associated with that lease. The timing of those tax payments are dependent upon the disposition of the lease in bankruptcy. And so that will likely impact our cash flow in 2006, and it could be 2007, but my best guess today is 2006. Those tax payments are somewhat larger than the after-tax charge, the book charge. As you know, the books, accounting books, don't necessarily track exactly the tax books for investments like this. And so I think you should think of the tax overhang on the Delta lease as being something in the neighborhood of $80 to $90 million that could hit in 2006 or shortly thereafter, depending on the disposition of that lease. With regard to SoapNet, you're right. SoapNet's up to nearly 44 million households, and that obviously puts it in a better position vis-a-vis advertisers. SoapNet did not have a meaningful impact on the quarter in terms of operating profit contribution, but it is reaching that inflection point where we're hopeful that it will start to contribute at a higher level going forward. We are investing in some of the programming there, and that's part of the reason that the impact wasn't as great as you might have expected, but we do think this channel can have an impact in the years ahead, and so we're very pleased with the fact that it continues to grow, and it continues to grow its revenues quite nicely.
Thank you. We'll take the next question, please.
The next question is from the line of Michael Matheson with Sanford Bernstein.
Thank you. I have two ones. First is to Tom or Bob. If I was to see you buy more sports rights, say at ESPN, baseball playoffs, or NASCAR, would you be comfortable still with your double-digit guidance for operating income going forward?
Well, first of all, we're not going to make any assumptions in terms of what's bought or not, but we are predicting double-digit increases for ESPN going forward. Tom, how far out we've said?
Yeah, through 05 through 09 anyway.
And I think it's safe to assume that if ESPN makes any additional commitments on programming without being specific as in terms of which ones they might make, that guidance would continue.
Do you have a second question, Michael? Okay, we'll take the next question, please.
Our next question is from the line of Kathy Stefanis with Prudential.
Yes, hi. I had a couple of questions as well. Bob, you said that you were able to strike the right deal with Apple with respect to the video downloads, and I know you probably can't talk about the economics very much, but could you give us a sense about how you were thinking about the price points for the downloads as it compares to, say, ad revenue per viewer? Is it something that leaves you just as well off, better or worse than, you know, say you lose that that viewer on a regular basis, especially in light of recent announcements made by Magna Global where they're basically saying now that they're only going to pay for live ratings, not for DVR'd or, I guess, DVR'd viewers? And then the second question is, you own 100% of Chicken Little. Can you give us a sense of what the economics might look like on Chronicles of Narnia, since you have a partner there? Thanks.
we actually spent a lot of time thinking about the pricing on the iPod platform, and we also considered what impact, if any, it might have on primary viewing. And we concluded that while what iPod is offering is a wonderful experience, and I urge everybody to check it out because the quality is sensational, we did not believe people would opt to watch programming on iPod instead of or in place of watching it on what I'll call a large screen experience via multi-channel distributors or via an antenna. So in other words, we actually believe that this is, for the most part, incremental consumption. These people who are buying these episodes are buying them because of convenience, because they were not able to watch some of their favorite programs for whatever reason and would not have watched them. And so what we're doing is giving them an opportunity to catch up or to watch more episodes than they would have. So we actually are viewing the revenue that we're getting as incremental revenue, and not in any way as revenue that cannibalizes primary consumption. Which goes back to the point about pricing. As we looked at the Apple platform, we really view it as what I'll call a high-quality, very convenient, mobile, small-screen play. It's possible at some point we'll enter into similar arrangements on other platforms, but for what I'll call a large-screen experience. And I think there, when you consider large-screen experience, you have to consider the impact that has on primary viewing, because it's possible that could be a little bit less incremental than the smaller screen platform. I also happen to believe that we should charge more for large screen experience than for small screen experience. And while we haven't entered into these deals, and so it would be premature to suggest what we would charge, I'm speaking just on behalf of the Walt Disney Company, I actually believe if we're going to offer the convenience of that, sort of that window, or convenience in terms of giving people an opportunity to watch programs they could not have watched before on a large screen, that we're delivering even more value under that circumstance than we are on the Apple platform, and thus we should charge accordingly. Regarding Narnia, you know, we're not getting specific at all about the economics. We've got a good partnership with Walden Media on this. They deserve a lot of credit for buying the rights to not only this book, but to other C.S. Lewis books as part of the Narnia Chronicles. They had some real vision in that regard, and we think the partnership is a good one. We also believe the movie is a great one, and regardless of the fact that we've got a partnership, we think that this will be a real success for the company over the long term, because we think it will spawn more movies, of the series, and ultimately become a very, very valuable franchise for us.
Yeah, I think that's what right. The right way to think of it is it's a partnership and basically a 50-50 partnership. It's obviously a film that we've got a fair amount invested in, and the good news is we think that value really shows up on the screen and can be one of those films that breaks through. So we're quite hopeful. I think you should assume that there could be some nice positive impact. I'd look for it in the latter part of the year in home video, not necessarily in the first quarter when we put it out, but we're actually one of the films we're most excited about.
Thank you. We'll take the next question, please.
Our next question is from the line of Tuna Mobi with Standard & Poor's Equity.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Internet strategy, I was wondering if you can articulate, how you see your internet strategy in terms of advertising. Are you likely to focus more on, branded display, and how you see the opportunities in paid search? And in paid content, should we expect that you're going to focus more on direct-to-consumer or is working with the content aggregators? And related to that, on the internet and wireless business, I understand that you, for the fiscal 2024, you had roughly $300 million in revenues with approximately $40 million in operating margins. My question is, I was expecting actually high 20s growth for this fiscal 2025. So did you achieve that target? And how do you see the combined internet and wireless business doing in fiscal 2006 and beyond? I'm actually looking for perhaps $1 billion in revenues by 2010. I'd like to confirm if that's realistic, and also to confirm that business, those numbers exclude video games. Thank you very much.
So this is Bob. I don't mean to sound impertinent. I think you just asked us 10 questions. I think we should charge maybe for more than one. I'll start with the first, which is our internet strategy. For the most part, our strategy has been to take our brands onto the internet And actually, we're doing quite well in that regard, particularly with Disney and ESPN, where we're number one in their categories, family and sports. We're working hard at not only expanding sort of content in a sort of a branded internet environment, but we're also working to expand things like community and direct consumer relationships, et cetera, and so on. In terms of, and we're going to continue to do that. We're also obviously creating product not just for what I'll call internet consumption, but for wireless consumption. Again, branded content so far has been our priority. I don't rule out either adding more brands, either creating them organically or potentially acquiring, but for now, the direction of the company is to take our what I'll call traditional media brands and move them as successfully and as deeply as we possibly can into new media space. In terms of whether we go, paid search was your second question. Look, we had an opportunity at one point when we owned InfoSeek, which is a pretty good search engine. It was part of what became our Go portal. We got out of that business. I think we'd be hard-pressed to play catch-up with the likes of Yahoo and Google in paid search. And while it's possible that we'll offer some, maybe in the video search direction, I think it's unlikely for us to be what I'll call a real competitor to them in that particular direction. As it relates to paid content through aggregators or direct-to-consumer, I think thanks to technology, you'll see a real blend because we'll have an ability to do both. We actually like the relationship we have with aggregators or intermediaries because they invest a lot in capital to create the necessary infrastructure to reach consumers. In some cases, they provide us with either upfront guarantees or an environment that is a healthy environment for us to sell our content within. But I think you'll end up seeing both. Tom, we're going to let you answer the other five questions.
Well, you know, as tempted as I am to sign Steve Wozniak up for a really big number, we haven't made a specific projection. I think that we won't today because the nature of our initiatives here are still somewhat organic. We do think there's a fair amount of upside. We've seen nice growth in our wireless business in particular. We continue to see nice growth in our internet advertising. And, you know, we think there's a great deal of potential. We just did a small, albeit acquisition, company called Living Mobile in Europe that we think can put us in the business in a bigger way in mobile applications. And we're clearly looking to grow that business. So we tend to shy away from sort of revenue-driven growth rates because, of course, you can always buy revenue, and that's not what we intend to do. We think that our collection of branded properties provides a nucleus around which we can build a business that drives substantial revenues in mobile and wireless, in traditional internet, and in things like multiplayer games, et cetera. And we've got initiatives working against each of those areas. We think it's going to be a substantial business, although I'm not looking to make a specific prediction or sign Steve up for a specific number at this point.
Thank you. We'll take the next question, please.
Our next question is from the line of Doug Shapiro with Bank of America Securities. Sir, if your phone is muted.
Sorry, can you hear me now?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, I have one that's kind of picky in and one that's maybe more philosophical. The first one was I was wondering if you could quantify the amount of the deferred revenue recognition ESPN in the quarter compared to last year. The other one, which might sound a little bit out there, but Bob, just in light of the soft spot market and changes in the affiliate conversation in the last couple of years and your continued efforts or maybe accelerated efforts to be agnostic to distribution, just wondering if it still makes sense to own TV stations.
Sure. With regard to the change in deferred revenue recognition Q4-04 to Q4-05, that's a little bit under $50 million in terms of the net year-over-year impact. So if that's helpful.
On the TV station side, while I recognize that broadcast television stations are, in a way, distributors, we actually view them more as content creators. A local news brand, particularly on an ABC station, has real value in the marketplace, as does their syndicated programming that they carry. A number of our stations carry Oprah, as a for instance. And then lastly, the value that they create for the television network, which we believe is a real engine to fund the creation of great product with application across multiple platforms and territories. So we believe in the television, the local television station business, particularly the people who run our local television stations and the results that they've been delivering for quite a long period of time. We believe they'll continue to deliver.
Thank you. We'll take the next question, please.
Our next question is from the line of Alan Gould with the Texas Blood Shorter.
Thank you. Tom, in your remarks on ESPN, you said most of the affiliate fees have been locked in, or you said they're about to be locked in. Can you update us on the potential deals with Comcast and Time Warner?
Sure, to some extent. The conversations are continuing. We have substantial agreements, and while we're not going to make a specific prediction on when they'll be finalized, we feel quite good about our ability to finalize them, consistent with all the guidance we've been giving you.
I'm assuming it's more than just an ESPN deal. It's probably a bigger deal between the two entities. Must carry anything else like that thrown into this sort of deal?
It does involve multiple outlets and must carry to some extent. So you're right, and that's part of the reason that it's a long, complicated negotiation, but we're in good shape.
Yeah, they're both what I'll call omnibus deals. That also include a variety of digital media content and some new content. We've distributed, just for instance, ESPN 360, the broadband ESPN offering through some multi-channel systems, and that's also on the table in these deals.
We have time for just one more question, operator.
And our final question is from the line of Richard Greenfield with Folsom Global Partners.
Hi, Bob. A question in terms of technology and how you think about content. As you look at the greater number of distribution outlets for your content, it would seem like owning your content in all respects, or fully controlling your content, is becoming increasingly important. In that sense, does it make sense for you either to own Pixar outright or to seek to walk away and actually just focus on your own production? Essentially what I'm getting at is, how do you think about distributing somebody else's content given where technology is driving the number of distribution outlets? And then just lastly, if you could comment on, over the course of the past 12 months, when you look at the DVD environment that you talked about, how is the hand-drawn animation faring? Things like Bambi and some of your other hand-drawn titles, how is that doing relative to the CGI titles that you've worked on? What are you seeing in terms of the impact on your library? Thanks.
I'll start with the second question. I'm a strong believer in the quality of movies, not necessarily the genre or the style in which they're made. A good movie is a good movie, whether it's a romantic comedy or an action-adventure, whether it's a hand-drawn animated film, or whether it's a 3D film. For instance, we put Chicken Little out this past fall, a movie that's Cinderella, a movie that's 55 years old. And not only is it a beautiful film, but it's doing quite well in the marketplace. And I think that's a fitting example of how quality stories and characters and a good look, whether it's hand-drawn or not, are going to break through in a relatively competitive marketplace. As to your question about, essentially it was about Pixar, but it was really about owning content versus being a distributor. I'm not going to be specific about Pixar, except to say that you're going to see a blend of sorts at this company, because even though our primary focus in allocating capital to create content that we own, we obviously have to be somewhat judicious in nature in that regard. We don't necessarily need to own everything. The television network is a good example of this. Just because we're doing extremely well with Desperate Housewives and Lost and Grey's Anatomy, et cetera, and so on, a goal to own 100% of our content, while that might be nice, would result in a significant investment and a lot more risk. And we're not sure that being that aggressive is necessary. And I guess the same would be true in movies. I think if a good movie comes along that's made by a third party and we've got an opportunity to either partner with them like Walden, or as we've done with Pixar, or to become a distributor of what is, again, a very fine movie, I'm not sure there's anything wrong with that. I imagine you'll see a balance or a blend.
Well, thanks again for joining us today. Note that a reconciliation of non-GAAP measures referred to in this call to equivalent GAAP measures can be found on our Investor Relations website. Let me also remind you that certain statements in today's press release and on this conference call may constitute forward-looking statements under the securities laws. These statements were made on the basis of management's views and assumptions regarding future events and business performance as of the time the statements were made, and management does not undertake any obligation to update these statements. These statements are subject to a number of risks and uncertainties, and actual results may differ materially from those expressed or implied in light of a variety of factors, including factors contained in our annual report on Form 10-K and in our other filings with the Securities and Exchange Commission. This concludes Disney's fiscal year-end 2005 conference call.
We thank you for your participation in today's conference. This does conclude the presentation, and you may now disconnect.